Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing is weeks away, and SDPB is featuring space-related stories to mark the occasion. South Dakota places and people have, and still do, contribute significantly to space exploration and related sciences. SDPB producer Brian Gevick joins us now from our Vermilion studios with the story of a current NASA employee with some very close ties to the state. Hey, Brian, welcome back.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
All right, we talked a couple weeks ago when you were visiting the Kennedy Space Center in Florida and you were interviewing people involved in the space program. Who do you want us to meet today?
Well, when I was in Florida, I had the pleasure of talking with an aerospace engineer named Scott Vongen. He's at NASA. He actually is from Granite Falls, Minnesota, but that's 90 miles due east of Watertown. Scott got his undergraduate degree from the School of Mines in Rapid City, and he's obviously spent a lot of time here in the state, and he says he's still in touch with a lot of people he knows in South Dakota. Now, Vongen graduated from mines in the early 1980s. He went on to get another degree, an advanced degree, and over the years he's had a lot of experience in several different roles at NASA, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But first thing that you learn from talking to Scott Vongen is that he really, really loves space science and engineering, and he always has. He says he's one of those people who always knew exactly what he wanted to do and where he wanted to do it.
As a youth, I got involved or interested in electronics at a pretty young age. A neighbor in our community got me interested in amateur radio, ham radio, and the hands-on aspect of electronics and listening to the world on shortwave appealed to me, and building transmitters and that tinkering of electronics and engineering said, I have a path, and I think that path is electrical engineering. So at the School of Mines, that was my undergraduate degree, a BS in electrical engineering. And how that led to the Kennedy Space Center and NASA is another part of my youth that's worth sharing. Is I'm one of those maybe fortunate people that I knew what I wanted to do at a very young age. I know it's not unique, but I was influenced by NASA's space program. And so growing up watching, to some extent, Mercury, but more so Gemini and certainly Apollo, I was in grade school. These are human beings walking on the moon. How does one not want to be a part of that? And every young person, boy or girl, wants to be an astronaut, or many do. And I was one of those. So interested in space, interested in electronics. I want to work for NASA. And people who know me knew that in grade school that I would work for NASA. And that didn't change through high school, didn't change through college. In fact, a little fun fact, when I graduated from the School of Mines at the time in 82, and I think this again may be consistent with where the School of Mines is today, they prided themselves with 100% job placement for the graduating class. I was the only one in our graduating class who had not had a job offer by the time of graduation. That's not out of that I hadn't interviewed anywhere else, is that I only wanted to work for NASA. So I had cast my net to all of the NASA centers, but I hadn't heard back yet. And it took several weeks to finally the government process to reply. And in that time, Dean Pete, who is sadly no longer with us, the Dean of Students, would call me regularly and say, Scott, have you heard from NASA? We really want to check that box that you're employed. And I said, I'm hanging out for NASA, and I did get the offer. And I came to the Kennedy Space Center, and I landed in a dream job. And I mean that sincerely. I'm a young GS-7 engineer, new employee with the federal government, and my responsibilities were to work with the space shuttle's science experiments planned then with the budding young Space Lab program, which was a joint NASA and European Space Agency, ESA, program to put science laboratories and experiments into space. And so this bright-eyed, bushy-tailed young engineer was told, you will be assigned scientific experiments that you will be responsible from the principal investigators to help their team physically integrate them into the space lab and shuttle environment, electrically and software test them to verify the interfaces and the protocols necessary for them to be successful are met, And then, once that launches, to be a member of the science operations team to operate those missions through a successful mission and landing, and then returning the science instruments to the investigators. Oh, and by the way, you're also responsible for the ground systems to do all that. A lot of responsibility right out of college. You're young, you didn't know that that's something totally unique. It just seemed like this is a dream job. Yeah. Only later in my career and my fellow colleagues realized how really rare that was.
That enthusiasm, Brian Gevick, has not faded at all from how he talks about his job. Yeah. All right, tell us what he's doing now.
Well, you know, we should mention that he actually is qualified as an astronaut, and other astronauts will call him an astronaut, but he hasn't flown. So, you know, he will refer to himself as a NASA aerospace engineer. And, you know, he had done some engineering work related to scientific experiments aboard the space station. And then he began working with teams who were looking at going back to the moon. What exactly would be the architecture of habitat, for example, if you were going to set up a base camp on the moon? And, you know, out of that grew some higher level discussions, you know, that we're hearing more and more about now. And, you know, in fact, he's worked on programs that have been canceled several times, and for example, that's why, you know, despite being ready to go as a project specialist who would have gone up on the shuttle, well, they didn't have the program that he was going to go continue, so he was left out on that. So, you know, he says that's no problem because the work he's done as an astronaut and working on science for the space station and so on has really just prepared him more fully for his current role.
Where my current role and focus is primarily is I'm an interface for NASA with our international partners. None of this we do alone. And I mentioned early on in my career working with ESA, the European Space Agency, on the Space Lab program. Other countries started to participate more with NASA. It's not a surprise, it's what we do. Space is a common thread for any nation wanting to expand its capabilities. The international aspects of Moon and Mars are huge. And so I'm a member of a team called the International Space Exploration Coordination Group. It's a mouthful, but think of this as a non-binding organization, somewhat, if you will, a United Nations of spacefaring nations that meet on a regular basis, sit around a table, and discuss what do we jointly wish to do in space. The reason I mentioned non-binding, that's how you start building consensus. Before you get to signing bilaterals and multilateral agreements, putting pen to paper, you need to start with understanding a framework. And one of my roles within this team is working on a roadmap. It's called the Global Exploration Roadmap that sets a path forward that all of these nations can agree makes sense to do so. Without getting too much into the specifics of who's going to do what and when. If you all can agree on the path, what trip you're going to make, the next step later is who's going to bring what with on the trip and do what roles. My focus within that team specifically, I'm kind of narrowing down, is I lead a technology working group for NASA within that, and my counterparts from a dozen and a half other spacefaring agencies. And we look at, all right, here's where we want to go, returning to the moon and on to Mars. This is the type of architecture and elements we need to have to enable that. Then we say, what technology do we need to make that successful? Does today's current technology meet the need? Is state-of-the-art sufficient? If so, great. We can just buy that, if you will, or produce that. Or, as in, not to surprise you, there are several cases we simply are not ready to do this. We identify that critical technology. It goes on a list. That list is distributed amongst the agencies, and that provides a focus for what needs to be developed. If you want to return to the moon and go on to Mars in this time frame, you, in parallel, need to develop these technologies in power, in transportation, in communications, in habitat, and life support systems, and have them ready to enable that to happen. That's my current duties.
This is not a small thinker, nor is that a small
job. Yeah.
For a Minnesota, South Dakota kid.
Right. You know, one of the remarkable things that he talked about during this interview, and I just want to set the scene a little bit here. Mm-hmm. We were at the Space Center Visitor Center in the Atlantis Shuttle building. Yeah. So we're actually standing in front of the Atlantis Shuttle that is on display there. And, you know, I look at this guy and I look back at the payload area and I realize he knows everything there is to know about that. But what I was going to say is that Scott talks about, going to the moon and going to Mars and how there ought to be a progression there and potentially building a sort of jumping off point to the moon and then having the moon be a jumping off point to Mars. And what he's saying is, if you're going to go on a camping trip down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon for 2 months, you might want to go to your local county park for a day or two just to kind of make sure that you know what you're doing. And, so I think that's just a great analogy and how absolutely perfectly Midwestern.
Right. And I'm also intrigued at this idea of a non-binding organization where we're talking, these big conversations about who's doing what and how is it, that's tremendous. And there's a lot to get your mind around. Wouldn't you like to be in one of those meetings?
And just to understand that you have to have all of this background as an engineer and or a scientist. And Scott's primarily an engineer, but you have to have all of this background. You have to have experience in managing people and managing projects. And then finally, you get to the point where you can be with that group of people that is really looking at that high-level next mission.
Right. All right. Tell us about the preview event and some upcoming things for Space Age South Dakota.
Yeah, we've got a couple of screening events, and these are open to the public. There is one in the Sioux Falls studio Thursday, June 27th. That's tomorrow night. And the studio is at 601 North Phillips. Starts at 7 o'clock. We're going to show cuts from the PBS American Experience program, Chasing the Moon. We'll show a little bit from our documentary. And also we're going to have a presentation by Tom Loveland. He's retired now, but for many years he was the chief scientist at EROS, the Earth Resources Observation Satellite Center, and he's got some really interesting things to say about what's been revealed by all of the data and all of the various images that have been collected there for so many years.
Tom Loveland, a frequent guest on Kara Hetland's Innovation. Yeah. Every time he's on, I just want to – so you could come for the Tom Loveland presentation by itself, and then this great SDPB content. Go ahead.
We also have screenings at the South Dakota Air and Space Museum in Box Elder. It's near Ellsworth. That's on Saturday, July 13th, 9:30. We are going to do a presentation at Neutrino Day at the Sanford Underground Research Facility. That's also on Saturday, June 13th. And then
July
13th. Our program, July 13th. And then our program, Space Age South Dakota, premieres on Thursday, July 18th, which is pretty close to when the PBS American Experience program
And we'll have 2 hours of In the Moment dedicated on July 16th, which is the anniversary of the launch of Apollo 11. We're lining up some great guests for that time, and there's a documentary during our second hour for In the Moment, too. So all kinds of ways to connect with the universe and South Dakota's role in space and space technology. Brian Gevick, so much fun, so fascinating, such important work. Thank you so much for being here with us.